the catapult question. Everyone has a career story. Most of them are lies. Not lies like fabricated, lies like polished. The version that sounds good on LinkedIn. So today, I'm not asking what changed your career. I'm asking the other version. The one where you played it safe. What happens there? Where are you right now in the life you didn't choose? And right now, I'm joined by Stephen J. Manning, who is a renowned business leader. If you don't know him, you can check him out. There's loads and loads of content around what he's done in the past. He built a massive marketing business and has done over $47 billion in commerce. And we're here to talk about this very important topic. We've all had inflection points in our careers. For me, I've had multiple inflection points, but I think it all stems from one decision that I probably made, whether it was rightly or wrongly, or it was just a big mistake. I don't know. But what do you think, Stephen? Did you make one of these decisions that just changed your entire trajectory when you were younger?
Certainly, I think that with notable exceptions, pretty much everyone does. Let me go backwards. Notable exceptions. There are people who are programmed from darn near birth. Oh, hell, everyone in our family becomes a doctor. So you end up with basically 9 choices in life. You become a doctor. You end up working for the Peace Corps in sub-Saharan Africa because you burn out. You know, you have families. I know families. You know families that are hardcore, real successful athletes. They tend to, and their kids tend to end up in athletics until they succeed or burn out. Beaucoup examples of that. So the question then is, how do you shape your own trajectory? Now, I think by and large, you don't shape your trajectory. By and large, trajectory happens to you. The question is, what is it you're going to do with it? You know, lots is written about the fork in the road not taken. You know, the greatest line I've ever read was American baseball player Yogi Berra, who said, when you come to a fork in the road, take it. Now, good. And I combined that little gem from Yogi Berra. I was a catcher for the New York Mets. It's the perennial thing in the fortune cookies, you know. Open the fortune cookie, take out the little slip of paper, and it says, your success in your career is just around the corner. So I take the thing, turn it over, and I want to call the fortune cookie people and say, good, what corner? What corner? Then we go on to a Manning aphorism. Never look a gift horse in the mouth. Remember that? Well, my thought on that is quite radically different. Always look a gift horse in the mouth. Because you never know what you're going to end up with. You could end up with an equine with very expensive teeth that you can't afford. And ultimately, your dream ends up being in the glue factory. So then the question is, there are turns in your life, and I'll be glad to share mine, that happened to you. Question is, what does you do with it? Opportunities are right around the corner. No, they're not. They are if you look for them. Then the trick is to recognize that as an opportunity. Add to that one of my pillars of success, which is it is yes people that succeed, not no people, not wishy-washy people. The people who say yes, well, most other people will say no. But those are the people who I don't know, or they're taught, listen to folks like you and my parents and people that influenced me greatly in my life. Yes, people look at the forest and they know the forest of life and the forest of business is full of wolves. So now you want to go wade into those trees? The yes people who want to determine their own future understand their wolves there, understand the danger. Then they do the homework to say, okay, what's my upside? What's my downside in doing that? What do I need to do to be able to pursue that fruit inside that forest? And then they put on their big boy girls and pants and forge ahead courageously into the forest. And they slay those beasts. So as you go through life, stuff happens. You have options. You can just follow. You can get out, or you can lead. Lead yourself. Here's an opportunity. Is this for me? Now, there's the homework part. And by the way, you're not alone. Shockingly, people believe they're alone making those decisions, or they're going to talk to mom, dad, maybe an uncle, a friend. There are roads you take for all sorts of reasons. Let me give you one example. I went to work for a tiny little business when I was 21 years old going to law school. Why? I needed food for money and pay rent and a haircut every 6 months. That was pushing my budget. So I went to work for this essentially tiny business, which 2 years later was insolvent. Now, that was a time and place where everyone I knew was having a party, enjoying life, and changing jobs every year and a half. That was the way it was. In fact, you went for an interview, you hadn't changed jobs in 2 or 3 years, they looked at you like you don't have any ambition. You're stale. You don't know what's going on. So here's a fork in my road. So I went to work for that little company that was going bankrupt 2 years later. My boss, for reasons of his own, honored and entrusted me with going forward. While every one of my smart friends with their wonderful degrees, the lawyers, everyone, you know, Stanford MBA, they were changing jobs, man, every couple of years. I was still there. Made a little more money, and then I was making more money than the lawyers that worked for us. And then people looked at me, are you crazy? How long have you been there? Now, here's a fork in the road where you say, I have got to change careers or jobs. I've been here too long. 10 years. That's outrageous. On the other hand, there was a part of me that said, I made an investment of 10 years. Am I going to just throw it out the window? And that was a fork in the road. And I said, yeah, I really should. And then I said that again and again and again and again. That discussion ended 10 years later. But then I was running a very big business, very successfully, thousands of people, millions of square feet of space. And I had achieved a degree of success I had never dreamt of. But that was my cross in the road. I would say that 95% of people I knew would not have done that. What are you waiting for? Well, at some point it became something in me that said, I've invested too much time and effort in this. I can't just
stop
give
a
it
second.
Up.
That's really important, actually. That's really important. Do you think that is a sort of stubbornness, or had the business kind of reached a certain level where you could see that it was just growing incrementally, or like what was it that sort of stopped you from moving?
You're asking me a very fundamental question. I believe that attitude crystallized into one of my pillars of success. One of the things you and I talk about endlessly to anyone who will listen. It's one of my precepts in life. It's on my imaginary teleprompter that says failure is not an option. There's no way. My goal is to make money, to have acceptance from my peers and beyond, be respected. I will not fail at this. I made this investment. I will not fail at this. I will stay with it. I will make more decisions that I need to make to get there and then apply the other precepts of my life. For example, outwork everyone else. Try to outthink everyone else. Say yes when everyone else say no. I was in Chicago in a major snowstorm, bribing people at the airport to get some paper that I needed to get. You know, walking around with very large stacks of $100 bills and a case of Chivas Regal, passing it out to try to find my stuff that I needed to somehow get it. And one day when you're so inclined, I'll tell you what it costs to rent a 727 freighter out of Detroit to LA on Christmas Day. So
it's a fantastic business though, Steve. I've got to interrupt you there. It was a fantastic business that you were
involved. Obviously, we were in the direct response business. Early in the days, call it mail order. They were personalized every which way to hell. 13 pieces of paper, folding this way, that way. Oh, look at that beautiful coffee maker you're going to win. Well, how about you scratch it? It smells like coffee. Oh, you're also going to get this $100,000 gold bullion. Why don't you scratch it? End up with gold dust on your fingertips. Your name is all over. Just direct mail, if you will. I'm good in my career for, I don't know, 4 billion of those pieces in the States and another, I don't know how many millions in Europe. We expanded beyond that into the online world. See the pictures behind me? I was buying stadium banners in 30 years ago at Formula races. Think about camera angles before you buy a stadium.
But that's it. That's interesting. So
forgive me. And of course, then we discovered the internet.
You must have sort of seen that transition. There was a massive reduction in printing runs and letters and these sorts of things. And I actually think that there's a massive opportunity to send mail now. I think people love to receive mail. As long as it's not a bill, then they're perfectly happy. They love to receive
the right people love getting the right mail.
Was there a sort of moment in time you took this trajectory, right? When you look back over your whole career, like it's a sort of series of decisions, right? So do you remember the sort of day when the internet just sort of, you started getting into that there or what happened?
Well, I remember when I discovered the internet. Well, I didn't discover it. Al Gore invented it. I just came to it. One of my friends, who was an early pioneer, enormous, successful since then, in many different ways, all internet-related, one of the premier security experts on Earth, on internet security and so on, one day said to me, you know, you want to see something interesting? So I got on a plane, went to see this network operations center, 100 engineers and zero business. Now, we were the ninth people on the backbone of the internet. There was one phone call where my friend said, there's something out there called commercial internet exchange. You know what the internet is? No, this is commercial. There are 8 kids playing around with it. You want to do that? What's it going to cost? $2,500. And I said, okay, we have to fill out this form. So I got the 8.5 by 11 and said, your name, your address. What do you do now? And I can make this up. What do you want to do? $2,500. So I called this young man. I said, he said, well, you know, we charge $2,500 because it's a lot of money. Well, by then my friend was running a rather large business. I was running a business. That's a lot of money. I said, it is. And I said, so we priced it so high because none of our friends can afford it. We want to be limited. Now, those kids sold their nothing. They had nothing. They were exchanging data. I mean, they were hacking the NORAD computers. I mean, they were exchanging. They sold their businesses for hundreds of millions of dollars before too long, but we became number 9. And my friend Ronnie sold his share to Bechtel for $14 million a year later. That was a long time ago. So all of a sudden, we were in the internet business. I remember the first time I saw a browser. It was an airplane. With a long antenna between the seats until the kids in Champlain created the first graphic user interface. You could actually now see it instead of just codes. Wait a minute now. And then some kid who created the first big ISP called me one day and said, do you want an email address? I said, yeah. So I have one. The email address I have today, the root is still the same. It's changed, but the root's the same. And I said, now what? I said, well, you now have an email address. I said, great, but I don't know anybody else who has one. What am I going to do with it? Well, don't you think it's cool? That kid sold that for $500 million, $600 million a year later. I think that a lot of your crossroads are pressed on you, and then your judgment prevails, and your judgment creates an action. Once I understood what email was, email, I said, we should get in the email business. I said, there's no such thing as email business. I got news for you. We created the commercial channel because it was there. And what was the first thing we sold? We sold syndicates to the Spanish National Lottery in the United States. And people looked at us like we were insane. Well, we were insane, but we didn't know any better. But we, you know, I don't want to take credit for it because my friend saw that so clearly. I thought he was somewhere between insane and really cool. A lot of my friends, in fact, most of my friends are really unique, have unique careers. They've succeeded at one thing. Hell, I'm on my fourth career. That may or may not be very good, but when we saw the internet as a commercial possibility, we said, wait a minute now. You know how much money I spent to run a little test in direct mail? You mean I can just go tap, 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 tap and create it? Oh, you know what it takes to test pricing when you run television commercials, radio commercials, direct response, space, advertising? It's a big deal. They're expensive. Well, you know what it takes to do that online? Two keystrokes. I can test $12.95 against $10.95. in a heartbeat. Read my results real time.
So along the way, right, you've had sort of different people have influenced you along the way, as in mentors, as in bosses, as in partners and things like that. So each one of those people, obviously, I'm not going to say they were a turning point, but they helped you to stay on the right trajectory to become more successful. Is that a fair thing to sort of say?
Of course, you will run into people in your lifetime who will be very influential to you on things to do, and more importantly, things that you should not do. I live in LA. I was in New York on business. My best friend who lived there came up to my hotel room one night, and it was snowstorm, high floor in the hotel, and I got maintenance to open a window because my friend insisted on smoking. So I was either going to throw him out the window or he had a cigarette out the window. He said, I think it's time we ran a sweepstakes online. Okay, well, I've run 1,500 of those already offline. Well, I want to do it. I want to build a thing I want to create a free sweepstakes, which is moronic because they're all free. I want to create one and do it on the internet. I said, okay, it's 9 o'clock at night, snowing out. He's got a 2-hour drive home. Maybe he's had too many drinks. And he looked at me and said, I don't care what anybody thinks. I'm going to do this. I said, okay, so you got an idea? And I said, well, what do you think about the name Free Lotto? I said, well, lotteries by definition are not free, but a Free Lotto's got a buzz to it. Okay, so a week later, I'd written a website called Free Lotto, which was the first massive sweepstakes online. But Buddy raised $50 million real quick and created the business, and we just worked on it every damn day. Now we were in the internet world, and we created the biggest sweepstakes ever online. It's kind of like he looked at me and said, I don't care what anybody thinks. I'm going to do this. So I thought about it. Not that big a deal for... I get it. Not that big a deal for me to create that. So messed with it on a plane and when I got home, and here's the basic, this is how it works. It took us another maybe month to polish it. And then he raised a bunch of money and it was very faithful to us. It's a grand idea. We got knocked off 10 times in the first year, but that's not the point. We were ahead. Then you have meetings with meet people and they tell you, with certainty, this is the way. And you walk out saying, God, I hope whatever he has is not contagious. Because that's exactly what we're not going to do. See, one of the tricks, you know, one of the things that the devil's best trick is to convince people he doesn't exist. One of the greatest tricks in success is understanding here's things we do and things we never do. I grew up with that notion from my dad and mom. in terms of our behavior, in terms of the construct of our morality, if you will, some people challenge the words construct and morality, is that, well, these are some things we do and some things we never do. To which us children would say, what do you mean? Our friends are doing it. Why can't we do it? Why are we special? Why are we different? The answer to that is ultimately, when I asked the third, fourth, fifth time, it's my dad will look at me and say, because I said so, just the way it is. I managed to pass it on to my kids. There's some things we do and some things we never do. Same in business. Now, if you make that decision, we're not going to do that, and you're proven wrong, back to failure is not an option. The thing that people need to understand when you take those forks, when you make those decisions, what is spectacular is that the most successful people, the best of the best, the top of the top, fail. And they fail often, and they fail spectacularly. But when they fail, it's not because of lack of the work. They've done it. It's because they got into something that something did not work intrinsically. It was never going to work. No matter what, it was never going to work. Oh, yes. And then they wake up in the morning and say, I'm done with that. I'm on to that thing that school is doing because I think that's a good thing and I can do it that well or better.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? You raised a really good point there, right? Is those changes, those career changes and entrepreneurial venture changes and things like that can often happen from a lot of stress, right? Like, because you desperately want to achieve something and you're at a point where change. So you either quit your job, find a new one, give notice, walk out the door and tell them to F off, or you come up with an epiphany around your product, right? So maybe your product is one thing, but it doesn't really reach the audience I want to reach. So what other product can I add on to this to act that audience, right? It's quite simple in many ways, right? And it's exciting, like that whole creative process under pressure. That's the big thing I've learned from you the past 6 months is that pressure that most people run away from, drink alcohol, take drugs, and try and forget about is actually the pressure that makes you the success that you could become, right? I think a lot of people just discount that. The three rungs of the career ladder at the beginning now are actually broken. And the major issue is that people think they come out of university and they come out of an MBA, whatever it is, and they've got all these skills. And the fact is that they actually don't have these skills. They might have some skills, but unless they're willing to work for free in the beginning, most of these people are going to be out of work and really struggling because they don't have any knowledge. And we're at a point now where it's extremely worrying, if I'm perfectly honest. And that's another reason Monday Influencer exists, the work that we're doing exists. And, you know, and if you're listening to this and you're like, wow, these guys make some sense, you got to subscribe because we're looking, you know.
Well, I will tell you that, you know, I would stack what we produce in terms of advice, in terms of the analytics and mostly advice. This is what the issue is. This is how you fix it. This is your anticipated outcome. Problem, resolution, outcome. Let me be audacious to say that I will stack Monday Influencer up against any MBA program, excluding the finance side, any MBA program in any major university in the world. Some of the people that read us are just so darn smart and really accomplished when they read it and say, how'd you come up with this? Now, this dovetails something I read 2 weeks ago. Blah, blah, blah. It's, hey, can I pass this on to someone else? I say, yeah, and then make them subscribe, please. But, you know, people emerging from our universities, unless they are in some limited tracks, don't even make it as ordinary French intellectuals. Speaking of not get a job, one of my acquaintances is a phenomenal physician. He's a great diagnostician. He's one of the best we have. Just two brilliant kids. Let me explain brilliant. Brilliant is Dean's List, magna cum laude, out of Stanford, and the other one's out of Yale. Now, and all you have to do is talk to them, say hello, and you say, my God, and you can see it. He spent 1 year working at a massive investment bank in Chicago, free. He got a free job for a year with his MBA, and without a doubt, he is top, he's the top half, top quarter percent. At the end of that, he got a job. He's in London for 2 years now, working for a company in London. Couldn't get a job in the United States. Okay? Now, but that happens to be reality. There is no substitute for homework. There's no substitute for experience in the trenches. So why do you pick a career? You know, if you all want to read the Monday Influencer coming next Monday, it very digs very, very deeply on lessons learned from our elders and important mentors in our lives. You have to understand the benefit from those relationships. You know, the older my kids get, the dumber I become. Really, actually, I believe that you and I are getting better, smarter, wiser. Our opinions are much more qualified. We are very much into editorial judgment rather than dictum, if you will. Now, and I have to emphasize this again. I have a friend who's a world-class columnist, broadcast and print. He's a really smart guy. His wife is a really smart finance exec. I'm spending a great deal of time with their son, who graduated top 1% from a prestigious school, who wants to do that for a career. Well, he may at some point. What about right now? That creates a paralysis in itself. Fortunately, I believe for him, his dad said, will you talk to my kid? Well, I try to get him to become a ski instructor, a mountain climber, to work a charity in sub-Saharan Africa, to chase girls in Kuala Lumpur, etc. Rather than that thing he's going to become. Because I know he's smart as a whip. He has imagination. And once I can untrack him, man, he may become the best shoeshine guy in the tri-state area.
But I tell you what, you've raised a very important point there, is that actually we have many different stages of our lives and we have many different stages in our careers. And if I think back to when I went into the, be really cautious, if you're still listening to this, you got to subscribe to Monday Influencer, go and do that because that will help you a lot. But you got to be cautious, you got to be choosy, and you need to spend your time wisely.
And know this, you are known by the company you keep. Know this. This is as true as any statement I make. Remember, you're known by the company you keep. Surround yourself with those people.
I've got to interrupt you there. If you want to do something and you get advice from someone that has never done it, right, then you are making the biggest mistake of your life. If you want to build a business, you need to work with someone that's built multiple businesses. If you want to learn about marketing, you need to learn from someone that has done marketing at a high level. If you want to learn about jiu-jitsu, you need to go and learn from someone that's done jiu-jitsu at a high level. You're going to get the wrong advice, and you're never going to get there. And just because you're talking to this person who's never, ever done what you want to do, and they talk confidently, well, you should do this, you should do that. Or they tell you, no, you can't do that. You are completely in the wrong place at the wrong time with the wrong advisor.
Simple answer. You decide to make your first purchase, your kid. You have $200 Christmas gift. You're going to buy $200 worth of stock. You're smart. So they introduce you to Uncle Joe, who's a stockbroker. He says, I think you should buy stock in Coca-Cola. and then you go buy the stock. Wrong. If you're my kid, then say, Uncle Joe, Uncle Joe, I'm going to spend $200 on stock in Coke. Are you? In Coca-Cola. Well, what do you mean? Well, you tell me I should spend money. How about you spend yours? How's that? That's an ordinary lesson. Well, you know, we are stockbrokers who make recommendations, but there's nothing guaranteed. And I make my money on commissions. I got it. So it's okay for me to take that risk, but it's not okay for you to take that risk. How about you take your advice and pound sand, Uncle Joe? But to bring back something I said quite a while ago, is that the thing that all of you listening to this need to know, and this is a certainty, that when you're thinking about doing this job, a career change, a business, an issue that you must deal with, the best of the best, the top in that field, the most accomplished, will help you if you ask. Really? You think that the president, CEO of Coca-Cola, is going to help me when I want a bottle of water? Well, if you can get to him, he will. Why? Because it's a thing they all do, and you know what they want? If you can get to them, there's an art form to getting to them. That's what you have people like me. Get to the guy. When you get to the guy, they're going to spend more time with you than you ever imagined. And what they want is for you to say thank you and to keep up. Come back and follow up and say, hey, Mr. Schooler, I did what you did, and I spent $1,000 doing it all this time. And here's where I'm at. I think it's pretty good. What do you think? They want you to come back, to take pride in your accomplishment. Really? CEO Coca-Cola is going to talk to me? Yeah, just forget them. Country Club. I said, that guy is CEO of Caterpillar. Oh, how cool is that? You can walk up that guy and say, Mr. Johnson, I'm sorry. You're in tease. I have two business questions I'm dying to ask you. You're the guy who knows this. They're going to look annoyed, and then they say, okay, go ahead, kid. You ask questions. You know what you're going to get? You're going to get a brief lecture. And the thing they say, look, I'm off the tee in about 2 hours. We'll come by a clubhouse. We can talk some more. Okay, kids, sit down. What are you doing? Why are you doing it? And you walk away from that more with more information, knowledge, go forward that you'll get 6 years at Wharton. That's just the way it works. You can create obligation from them when you say, look, I will skip the rest of my workday. I won't go to school tonight. I'll see you at 6 o'clock. The best of the best, the top of the top, the most accomplished people, if you get to them, they'll be glad to help you. It's not going to cost you anything. In fact, you create a relationship that's beneficial going forward. When you come to those crossroads, sometimes you say, now who knows more about this than anyone else? Yeah, they're going to talk to me. Shock. They will. They will. If you phrase it right, that's when you talk to the older folks around you, parents, mentors, so on.
It's funny you say that, because we are six levels away from pretty much anybody on the planet. That's what's fascinatingly interesting. So if you think about that, if you put some content in front of someone and then they share it, and then one of their other friends shares it, and another two or three people share it, you've got the chance to get in front of that person, right? Or you could reach out. You could reach out to them, because people are actually there to help you. That's the point. And that's what we actually miss. When you become successful, you just want to help other people to achieve success. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you,
Daniel. Always been a pleasure. And thanks, everyone, for listening.
Pleasure's mine. Anytime.
And subscribe to Monday Influencer.
Thanks very much for listening to Influential Visions. Please make sure you share this episode with your friends and business connections. And don't forget to drop us a review wherever you listen. Thanks.